school-aged kids in Wisconsin are not having the same experience in education during the pandemic. Some have been in class in person since the fall. Others have spent some time learning over the internet before heading back into buildings. And some are still virtual, and they'll stay that way through the end of the school year. Leaders of Milwaukee's public schools have a phased reopening plan starting in April. Here on The Morning Show, we're talking with the leader of the area's teachers union. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent, and you're part of this conversation. Call 800-642-1234. Teachers, we want to hear from you. What are your thoughts on returning to the classroom? What directions have you received from the district so far? Maybe you're a parent or someone involved in the community. What are you seeing in your part of Wisconsin? 800-642-1234. Amy Mizialko is president of the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association. Amy, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
State health authorities say teachers may become eligible to receive coronavirus vaccines around March 1st. That depends on vaccine supply. How are teachers feeling about this milestone?
You know, it truly is a milestone. So, and it plays a huge role in the ability to reopen, but certainly not the only role. So, you know, we're excited for it to pass that threshold of being in line and for it to be our turn, so to speak. But we also know that the issue of supply has been an ongoing issue for the past couple of months. And so we always, know that the issue of access and availability and supply is something that, we expect, we won't be able to predict what that will be like.
Teachers may see vaccinations as a real opportunity. A lot of people do. We understand the importance of achieving herd immunity. How many teachers, though, do you expect to decline receiving the vaccine?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. It's absolutely fundamental that we roll up our sleeves for our students and to take that measure, that mitigation measure, to make sure that we can, resume as much normalcy as possible. So we're hoping that as educators see other trusted colleagues and leaders, go ahead and, happily take the vaccine, that others will feel safe and comfortable to do so as well.
The latest guidance from the CDC says access to vaccination should not be considered a condition for reopening schools for in-person instruction. Do you agree?
Absolutely not. The CDC has been all over the place over the past year. We are not in agreement with that. Making certain that public education workers have access to both shots with wait time after each one to make sure that the public education worker is fully inoculated. That is baseline and key to keeping our students safe, to keeping our community safe, and to resuming in-person education.
How do you see that rippling so far beyond the teacher who's vaccinated?
I'm sorry, could you?
Absolutely. How do you see that vaccinating teachers means that you're broadly, you're protecting students, you're doing it for students, you're doing it for the community? If teachers can put on masks and try to stay distanced and take other precautions already?
There are all kinds of mitigation strategies, and we want every single mitigation strategy on board to provide the greatest protection. So classrooms and schools aren't islands. our students come to school by the tens of thousands and then return back to the community. So we, you know, beyond making sure that public education workers in Milwaukee have the opportunity to be fully inoculated, you know, there's also this other piece of access regarding the vaccine in our community. So we in Milwaukee, I believe we're at 66 out of 72 counties in vaccines, and most of that deficit is coming from the city of Milwaukee. That is another example of institutional racism in poorer health outcomes. And we've only seen that become additionally exacerbated by COVID-19 for Wisconsinites of color.
Do you think teachers should be required to receive coronavirus vaccines then before providing in-person instruction?
I am not a lawyer, but I don't know if the school district is in a position to require it. But that aside, I truly hope that we have very large numbers of public education workers in Milwaukee and across Wisconsin that go ahead and take advantage of that very important protection opportunity.
We're talking about schools and the coronavirus with Amy Mizialko. She's president of the Milwaukee Teachers Union, and we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Do you work in education? Maybe you're a bus driver or a custodian or an administrator. What do you want us to know about what's happening in your part of Wisconsin? Parents, grandparents, we want to hear from you about your questions and your experiences, too. You can call 800-642-1234. And Amy, Madison, Green Bay, Racine, some other large public school districts are returning more students to classrooms in March. Milwaukee has a plan to phase in starting in April. How do you see conditions in Milwaukee public schools different than other districts?
You know, Milwaukee Public Schools obviously is the largest school district in the state. And, you know, I do want to place this entire conversation within the context of Republicans voting time and time and time again to defund public education for more than a decade. And so there is a drastic difference between how a district weathers any challenge or obstacle, but certainly how a district is able to respond to a global pandemic. So, you know, and I'll also say that it's been very disappointing to see decisions made of late in Madison Public Schools, because those decisions are not safe for students or educators. It's been very disappointing to see decisions made at the school board at Green Bay. So, you know, we have always prioritized student safety. We're going to continue to do that. But, you know, I'll be very interested to see who calls in, because this issue of transportation is huge. It's a huge obstacle. And what it will take to simply safely transport tens of thousands of students every day. It's one huge challenge that's different from Milwaukee Public Schools. Mm-hmm.
What are you seeing when it comes to decisions? You said Madison in Green Bay that you say disappoint you.
Well, there's a clear rush to shove children and educators back in classrooms when conditions are not safe to do so. To do that when educators have not received even shot one, let alone be fully inoculated. So I'm extremely concerned for my colleagues in Green Bay, in Racine, in Kenosha, in Madison. I'm concerned about, you know, all school districts and any public education worker that is not being treated with the basic common sense, science, and respect that we need to make sure that folks are fully inoculated before they return. Of course, in addition to every other mitigation strategy that we can bring to bear.
Amy Mizialko is president of the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association. She stays with us as we talk about teachers' perspectives on helping students learn while keeping their classes and themselves safe. There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. Share your experience. Ask your question. What are you wondering? What are you seeing when it comes to educating kids in this pandemic? I'm Keeley Boltina. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network. School districts have changed the way we've taught kids in school for decades. That's thanks to COVID-19. Certainly, administrators are planning and making decisions, and teachers are doing different kinds of work every day to try to educate students who deserve to learn while trying to keep themselves and their families safe. We're talking about it on The Morning Show with Amy Mizialko. She's president of the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association. I'm Keeley Boltina. Share your experiences with us here on the Ideas Network. You can call 800-642-1234 as we spend this hour on education. And we've got Derek in Madison ready to speak with us. Hi, Derek.
Hi. I'm Derek in Madison. I got three young kids in the Madison School District. I work in healthcare, and my wife is a child care provider for after school, and they've had to turn the child care center into a kind of a host for hosting virtual learning for parents that still have to work or, you know, don't have the means to keep their kids at home. And I'm just generally frustrated. I'm glad that we're going back to school because it's been a year, you know, of working through this. I wish the emphasis from the teacher side was how can we get everybody back to school instead of more, you know, issues. Like my wife has to work with the kids every day, and they've been able to make it work with no issues. Everybody's wearing masks, and it's ages from 2.5 to hers is 13 years old is who she's taking care of. So I get the caution, but I wish the emphasis from the teacher side and the education side was how can we get this to work? Maybe smaller class sizes, more isolated environments, you know, more cohorting that stay together instead of we're not doing anything until we have, a vaccine for everybody.
Derek, thanks so much for sharing your experience and helping us understand what your family's been up against. Amy, what's your response to Derek?
Well, what families and parents and all of us, you know, have had to navigate over the past 11 months or so has been immense and continues to be. So, you know, I just want to be crystal clear that MTEA, public education workers, we want to be back in person with our students when it's safe, and any progress we make towards that is positive. That's why we're excited about the vaccine. But we need to be realistic about what it means to be safe. So I'm glad to hear that Derek's experience in Madison in the child care with his wife has been positive. I cannot say that we have experienced that same outcome here in Milwaukee. We've had multiple child care sites in the Milwaukee public schools that have had multiple COVID cases from the beginning, from when they were open until current. So, you know, to be clear, there are all kinds of mitigation strategies in addition to masking and social distancing. But, you know, we haven't even talked about ventilation and building safety. There are some schools that were built in the past few decades, and so they can be retrofitted to with HVAC filters to ensure that there is upgraded ventilation for students and staff. The buildings in Milwaukee Public Schools, the first school that I taught at was built in 1893. The average age of a school building in Milwaukee is 75 years old. So, you know, we are very much wanting to be back in person, but we are not going to risk the safety of students. We're not going to risk the safety of nearly 10,000 workers for Milwaukee Public Schools.
We've got Addie in Colfax who wants to talk with us. Hey, Addie.
Hi.
What are you thinking about?
So I'm a senior this year in high school, and I just, it's been kind of frustrating listening to the adults in my life and teachers kind of complain about us wearing masks when really it's actually been, it hasn't been a big deal at all. And I think us as kids have been really good about it.
Yeah, so you've seen your fellow students keep those masks on, try to stay distance, follow the rules?
Yes, definitely. We've actually, yeah, I think that when I go out to stores and everything, I see more kids my age distancing and wearing masks than I do older people.
Addie, thank you for giving us a call, for helping us understand what you see as a senior in high school. We really appreciate that perspective. We're talking about schools and the coronavirus with Amy Mizialko, who's president of the Milwaukee Teachers Union, and we're taking calls. Patricia in Colfax is also on the line. Hi, Patricia.
Hello. I'm from Colfax, and I have six grandchildren, and I have a son who's a school teacher. My question is, there are different designated essential workers, like doctors and nurses, bus drivers, people that work in grocery stores, et cetera. Why aren't teachers considered essential workers? Teachers need to be vaccinated. They are the teachers in our schools. If we want to get our kids back to school and we want our teachers to be there, get the teachers vaccinated, please.
Patricia,
that's
thank
what
you.
I have to say.
Yes, thank you for calling in. And I have a feeling that Amy agrees with your passion, Patricia. What do you think, Amy?
Absolutely. No, I appreciate Patricia's fervor in her statement because we share it. We have been asking from city health all the way up to state health to please prioritize teachers so that we can resume safe, socially distant, small group in-person school. And I also want to say I appreciate Addie calling in. I share her dismay at any adult who isn't wearing their mask properly and who isn't faithfully masking when out in public spaces. So I appreciate that she's taken it so seriously, and I know that so many of our students do, and it's very appreciated.
Our time is very short. Daniel in Fox Cities, let's talk with you real fast.
Yeah, I was just going to say I'm a coach for a school that's in person, and I've just been able to see the positive mental health impacts of being back in person has truly made me just encouraged. And so I guess I would just be curious to hear from the response of, you know, that there's health as a whole person. So what about the mental health in regards to waiting for the vaccine? Because these students are just needing to be back in person and interacting. And it's such a positive impact when you see that.
Yeah, Daniel, thank you so much for bringing that up. What do you think, Amy, weighing those risks and rewards?
No, absolutely. I have nephews, and they are involved in sports and obviously in school as well, and they are not in person right now. So mental health is huge. It is a fundamental priority, but I also want us to pull back and say those responsible for funding our public schools haven't cared at all about the mental health of our students in the way that they have defunded our school. So I, for policymakers and for elected officials who are talking so much about mental health right now, and we should, let us keep that same energy as we move forward, because our students will need those supports when they return to school. So we need to make sure that we have plenty of school counselors, good ratios of social workers and nurses and psychologists in our schools.
Yes, Amy, and we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much.
Amy Mizialko is president of the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association. Our conversation continues on the return to classrooms next. I'm Keely Boltina. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. The latest CDC guidance says schools can open safely with the right measures. We're talking masks and keeping distance among students and staff, hand washing, cleaning measures, even ventilation. Still, some students will remain in virtual learning across Wisconsin, and that means teachers, students, and parents are trying to figure out how to educate kids best when instruction methods differ, along with the fact that individual students have different opportunities and different ways that they learn best. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent. This is The Morning Show. We have two school leaders with us now. Steve Murley and Michael Johnson are the superintendents of public school districts in Green Bay and Eau Claire, respectively. Steve, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
And Mike, good to have you here.
Thank you very much.
Mike, we're talking about the CDC guidance on the safety of reopening schools. Did that guidance over the last couple of months spark some conversations at your district about expanding in-person instruction?
It did somewhat. And in Eau Claire, we're different than other school districts around the state, especially other large school districts around the state. While many larger than Eau Claire and smaller than Eau Claire had started in a virtual format, we had started in a hybrid format. So that means that most of our students were attending 2 days a week in a cohort model, except for our first and second grade students, where we were able to mine space, keep 6 feet of distance, but mine space for those first and second graders. And people will ask, well, why first and second graders 4 days a week and the cleaning and the virtual learning on Wednesdays? Well, that's because we thought first and second graders, from a curriculum standpoint, a learning foundational standpoint, you know, we wanted to make sure that they were able to get that literacy and numeracy at that young age, and we thought that was most important. So the CDC really cemented what we were doing in Eau Claire the entire year thus far, and that's really served us fairly well, although it's been extremely difficult for the entire year.
Yeah, we can't underscore enough just how different this has been for people and that it's created real hardship. Steve, what was your reaction to that new guidance on safety for reopening schools?
Well, the good news is that it was not materially different from what they'd shared with us before. So some of those main mitigation strategies that we know are most effective, using facial coverings, making sure that you've got appropriate hand hygiene, that you're doing the cleaning and sanitizing in your buildings on a nightly basis, and that you've got the physical distancing in, you know, all those pieces remained in place. And so those were things that we'd already spent months working on, making sure that we were ready to go when we had kids back in. Obviously, over the course of the summer and through the fall, there was lots of debates about positivity rate and burden rate and where the safety factor was there. Not that it's a moot point now, but obviously there's been such a rapid decline across the state and here in Brown County that there's a much higher sense of security with where we are today, regardless of which set of CDC metrics you apply to those two particular thresholds.
But Steve, you're applying them. This isn't a circumstance where you're saying rates are down, we don't need to worry about masks anymore.
Oh, absolutely not. Those mitigation strategies, I to be honest with you, I think they're probably going to be something that to some degree stay with us permanently. You know, just coincidentally, look at the flu rate across the nation here in Wisconsin and certainly in Brown County. And we know what frustration that causes for students, parents, families, et cetera. So I think some of those mitigation strategies are here to stay. And some of them certainly will be in place even when we start school next fall. Absolutely not. Those are, like I said, a permanent or semi-permanent part of the way we do business.
Mike, are you in the same position here on those mitigation factors we're talking about?
No, absolutely. I couldn't agree with Steve more. We've been able to learn so much about the virus and its spread throughout the community, but how we've been able to mitigate that in our school since we started in September. With our hybrid model, you know, the cleaning strategies, learning more that it's not as much surface as it is airborne, but we're still utilizing those strategies. The mask use is obviously critical for us too, and we have stayed true to that 6 feet of distance in all of our schools. But our board had approved a proposal last night where we will be bringing more students at our elementary level in person starting after spring break on April 5th. And in a district our size, you know, to shift models like that, and I know Green Bay has been in a different situation. Everybody's been in different situations in the entire state. It takes a lot of planning, even while you're running school in a hybrid format. And we're all preparing for next year as well with staffing and such. But I couldn't agree more with Steve about those mitigation strategies and what we've learned about the virus and how we've been successful with it in our schools.
We are talking about the return to classrooms with two superintendents. Michael Johnson is superintendent of the Eau Claire Area School District. Steve Murley also with us, superintendent of the Green Bay Area Public School District. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Parents, does your child attend a public school? How have they been learning? Has it been a hybrid? Are you able to send your child back to school? Maybe you've made the decision to keep them learning virtually. What's going into that decision and what are you seeing in your community? 800-642-1234 is the number, or you can send us an email with your question or your experience. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Steve, Green Bay School Board approved a plan to begin returning students to in-person instruction in March, which is next month. It's also March starts next week. What should parents know about this plan?
So we've got our elementary kids coming back in 4 days a week starting next week, as you said, March 1st. And parents need to know that, again, those mitigation strategies are all going to be in place. We made the decision to bring all of our elementary kids back in. And with about a third of our students choosing a virtual option, many classrooms will have adequate physical distancing. But, of course, that's on a class-by-class basis. So you could find one class that's got 5% of their kids in remote learning, and you could find another class that's got 50% of their kids in remote learning. Parents were very, very clear with us that having the ability to have the child maintain the relationship with their teacher was one of the most important factors of returning to class. And so to the greatest extent possible, we've got all children coming back on site with the same teacher that they had online. And so that means, again, depending on the number of children in a particular classroom that have elected to stay virtual, we'll see physical distancing be a challenge in some of our classrooms and not so much of a challenge in others. And that's the main mitigation factor that is probably our greatest hurdle right now.
Mike, what numbers are you monitoring to gauge whether in-person learning remains safe?
Well, we look at a variety of metrics. When we placed our plan in October to be able to share safely to reopen, and when the virus had really gotten terrible in the area in November, we were able to follow those metrics. And we have such a close relationship with our Eau Claire City County Health Department, as well as our regional medical providers like Prevea, for example. When I'm off this call today at 9 o'clock, I will be on a call with them weekly. And so that's very helpful. But we look at, you know, the overall positivity, the COVID positive cases for our students and our staff. We look at that daily, and that's updated on a spreadsheet. We also look at quarantine data or close contact data when parents call students in. That's very helpful for us to know every day for attendance how many students in all of our schools here in Eau Claire where we have maybe some hot spots or we have situations that have occurred that we need to focus a little bit more on, whether it's a classroom or a grade level that we had some quarantines and then we're able to speak with the teachers and the administrators to find out what they need as well. One thing that really served us well is that our, you know, it was really our ability to, because we're in the hybrid model and we were keeping 6 feet, is to keep that, to keep schools open. We only lost 6 days of in-person learning from November 30th to December 8th because we were not able to staff our schools. We had our district administration. I went out to schools. We were substituting. And our health department told us, you know, it was really difficult to just focus on one metric and one number because you need to be flexible and you need to adapt. And if you can staff it, your students are in a very safe place. Schools are safe when you use those mitigation measures of the masking and the distancing, especially. Those are the two most critical. When many schools closed for a couple months or weeks, we were able to stay open because we were able to staff it and stay true to those measures.
Yeah, and when thinking about that, it sounds like you're relying not just on the physical symptoms of people, but on the honor system a little bit with parents and teachers and students being honest about how they feel.
No, absolutely. And, you know, when we do our contact tracing in our schools, because we were able to keep that 6 feet of distance, I know that other districts who maybe had not, and that's something we have to be concerned with starting in April, on April 5th, when we're bringing our elementary students back 4 days a week, is we will not be able to adhere closely to the 6 feet. And we're going to be podding students like many elementary schools have done. And I'm sure that Steve's probably doing the same thing in Green Bay with his staff and with his administrators. In Eau Claire, we have about 21% of our students who are on a fully virtual model. So, you know, we have more students in our classes. So at our elementary levels, we're having to pod. And if there is a positive case, you look at the seating chart and you got to make two or three calls to those families to tell them that their child is going to have to be out of school for a little while. And those are never easy calls to make. And I know many administrators make those and those contact tracers in the district. But you're right. It's the honor system on the outside. But when it comes down to it in the schools, when we have those seating charts and we're asking those questions, what types of activities were you doing in class today? Were you mixing kids up? Mm-hmm. It's those protocols and procedures in the classroom that are so vital to the safety as well. And our staff in Eau Claire have been doing a tremendous job. I can't say that enough about them. You know, we've been learning together and it's been very stressful, but it's just been outstanding. We've only had four types of situations in our entire school year where we've had multiple people or multiple positive cases. You know, one was an adult situation, when people were a little too close together. And the other one was a very young classroom at our pre-K level. So we're very proud of that, but we have to look at so many things to keep the safety of our staff and our students and overall community.
Steve, I want to give you a chance to explain if there are unique protocols, something like podding that you're planning to do in your district.
Yeah, I'd actually just touch base real quick, too, on the comments that Mike just made about the honor system piece. Mm-hmm. You know, we use a screener that every single person that comes into the school, every employee, every student fills out every morning. And we were able to roll that out as we started to gradually return students to campus in the last calendar year. And so we were able to refine that. And it works really, really well. And one of the things that it does is it provides an early warning system that allows our school nurses to have immediate contact with people based on answers that they've provided inside that screener. And so we're able to react much more quickly than we would if we were simply waiting for information from outside entities. And so that's been a real plus for us as we try to make sure that we can control any concerns that are brought into the school from outside. From a podding standpoint, you know, really, I think one of the things that's important for people to remember is if you haven't been in a secondary school, a middle school, a junior high, or a high school in a while, you need to think back and about how much time you spend in common areas. So whether you're in the hallway, whether you're in the cafeteria, the library, et cetera. There's just a lot of moving and mixing of students at the secondary level. So potting isn't really effective for us with our middle school and high school students. So lots and lots of different processes that have been put in place. Depends on the school. You've got one-way stairwells in some of our schools so that there's an even flow of traffic so that we don't have kids kind of swimming against each other as they go through there. The cafeterias are set up so that the seats are 6 feet apart. In some cases, there's partitions between them.
School does not look like what it used to, for sure. Our guests are Mike Johnson, who leads the Eau Claire Area School District, and Steve Murley, who's superintendent at Green Bay Area Public Schools. Our conversation about school and education during a pandemic continues on The Morning Show. Your thoughts welcome at 800-642-1234. I'm Keely Boltina. Thanks for being with us on the Ideas Network. We're in a pandemic, and Wisconsin public school graduates did better than average on AP exams last year. Advanced placement tests are standard exams to measure whether students have mastered an area of learning. They're usually administered in May. A national report released yesterday shows 26% of Wisconsin graduates scored well on the exams in 2020, and education has really been upended because of the coronavirus. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. This is a conversation about educating students in these difficult circumstances. And there's time yet for your question at 800-642-1234. Mike Johnson is superintendent of the Eau Claire County Area School District. Steve Murley holds the same position at the Green Bay Area Public School District. And Steve, how are Green Bay schools monitoring academic success or even well-being of students?
God, those are two very big things. The social-emotional health, attack that one first. So we've got a structure built in so that every single day, every child has the opportunity to check in with the trusted adult, a teacher, a school counselor, so that they've got the ability to make sure that they are taking the temperature socially, emotionally of the kids, and they understand what their needs are. That will continue as we move into on-site, recognizing it's going to be an enormous transition for our students. Academically, we have a whole slate of formative and summative assessments. We just presented on that to the board this past week here to help bring them up to speed on how we're making sure that teachers on a regular basis are doing those measures to see where students are at so we can do what we can between now and the end of the school year to close some gaps and really get ready for summer school and next fall so that we're identifying the gaps and making sure that we've got the processes, the materials, the classes in place to get those kids back up to speed.
We've got Tegan in New Richmond ready to join our conversation. Hi, Tegan.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Certainly. What are you thinking about as we talk about this?
Well, I really appreciate this program. It's something that a lot of parents think about. You know, my two daughters are in elementary school in the New Richmond Public School District in St. Craig County, Wisconsin. And last year, of course, we were distance learning, and I saw a lot of emotional challenges with both girls. So I have a kindergartner and a fourth grader this year. And last year, the distance from their friends and just homeschooling, it was challenging. So the district took a survey at the end of last year asking what parents wanted, and I definitely voted to have my girls in school, regardless of the health risks. And this year, them being in school, my daughter being in kindergarten, this has been essential for her success academically, but also socially and emotionally. Both girls are doing very well, and the district is implementing a lot of the same structures that you guys have been discussing on this show. So I'm glad my girls are in school.
Tegan, thank you for sharing the decisions that you've made for your family. Mike, I hear Tegan saying there are benefits to both of having her kids in school and that she's really seen the social emotional side change right away. In a different vein, I mean, academics, it's not as easy to just feel more at ease because you're around people to try to catch up on those academics when kids have been through a lot in the last year.
Absolutely. There's a lot of trauma. It just seems hard to believe it's been almost a year since this had started. I was really interested in the caller and what she had shared. And one thing we have noticed here, and I'd be interested to find out in other districts as well, is on the flip side, we've had a variety of students. We've had 21, like I said, 21 students who had chosen, 21% of our students have chosen a virtual model. And we do have a virtual school, the Eau Claire Virtual School, and we had removed a cap a couple weeks back, board approved, to be able to offer that opportunity to more students, especially in our district. And we found that in surveying parents that there was a tremendous opportunity and a desire for that. And I think there's that niche that, you know, we need to provide more options for our students. And I think in using our Eau Claire Area School District staff this past year that we had to repurpose, they found a niche as well. There are some students that's the way they learn. They are far more engaged, and they may have some social emotional difficulties at school, maybe in a large system or a large school, and they really thrive. I have heard from families this year, but I've also heard from some staff saying that there are some kids that in the past maybe had not connected very well at school, but they just love the online. They love that virtual component, and they want to do that full-time in the future. So that's something we've learned about education in this year that needs to continue to move forward.
We have just a bit of time left, but Andrew in Madison had a question. Andrew said that he hadn't heard discussion about the new COVID variants that are more contagious. So I'd like each of you just to help us understand how the news of the variants moving around and being more contagious might affect your school. Steve, let's start with you.
Sure. So, you know, now there's the new LA or California variant that's out there. We follow that stuff literally daily. We get updates from our local healthcare providers, the county public health department, to better understand where they're at. Are they in Wisconsin? Are they headed this way type of thing? And it's going to have, in a sense, though, the same kind of impact that the regular strains do, which is student and staff absences. And Mike made a really good point before. Having enough adults in the building to operate safely, drive kids to school on buses, feed them food at breakfast and lunch, make sure that they are supervised and are learning in the classrooms with teachers and paraprofessionals. Having enough adults is key to success for us. And so we're monitoring these very closely because we need to understand the impact that it could potentially have on the number of adults that are able to report to work in any given day.
And Mike, I know we have very little time. What about in your area?
You know, it's the same thing as Steve had said. I mentioned before in the program that probably about 3 minutes I'll be stepping away and meeting with our Prevea. It's our Prevea update. And, you know, they've been predicting everything so very closely. You know, when they were predicting what was going on in Green Bay and with the virus and moving toward us in November, I mean, they were right on. And we really do. We speak with our Eau Claire City County Health Department every day, communicate with them, and also with the Prevea providers. They've been fantastic. Mayo and Marshfield Clinic, outstanding. But they're the ones that really follow the science and understand it. And then we need to work with our school community to make sure we're safe learning environment for our students and for our families.
Mike Johnson leads public schools in Eau Claire. Steve Murley, superintendent of the Green Bay Area Public School District. Thank you both so much for joining us. I'm Keely Boltina. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.